It's Gareth Sniff M. I'm Mark McKenzie, and I'm delighted to be joined in the studio now by the Right Honourable George Grubb, Lord Lieutenant and Lord Provost of the City of Edinburgh, a post he's held since 2007. George, good to see you. We've spoken on many occasions, normally, though, at Army events or the openings of things.
Delighted to be here. I mean, it's a great privilege and a pleasure to be Lord Provost and Lord Lieutenant, but it's always good to be with the services.
Let's talk about your links, first of all, with the military, because this isn't something that's just happened since you became Lord Provost. In fact, you're of an age where national service was essential.
Yeah, I mean, I did national service in the RAOC from 1954 to 56, but I also have another side to the military background, because my father, of course, served in the Royal Scots in the First World War. And I have a photograph of him standing outside the city chambers in the archway receiving his military medal from the then Lord Provost for what he had done in the trenches.
That's an incredible photo, because that really encapsulates where you were heading as well.
Yeah. I sometimes pinch myself and say, is this me? Here I am as Lord Provost. And
yeah.
I look at the photograph of my dad, who was only, well, he must have been about 20 when he received his military medal. He had actually been awarded in 1917, but by then, from 1917 to 1919, when he actually was given the medal, he had gone through something, some experience, and he was an amputee.
Did he talk to you much about that?
He didn't, no. It's only after he died that I really began to research what he had been doing in the army. And of course, I look back on it with some shame in a way, because when I was in my national service, I can remember coming home after square bashing and boasting to him that I had managed to press my greatcoat and bull my boots and all the rest of it. He just looked at me and I thought, yeah. Now I realise, of course, he was in the trenches. He was actually, it was for real.
I think the phrase he'd possibly been thinking was, you don't know you're born, son.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your time in the National Service, you touched on it slightly there, but what memories do you take out of that?
Well, I remember the immediate shock, because I'd left school at 1954, and there was the Scottish schoolboys half-mile champion and Scottish junior half-mile champion, and they went into the army, and the first NCO that I met said, oh yeah, we knew you were coming. I said, what do you mean? He said, yeah, we've got a cross-country race next week, and you're on the team. That was a six-mile race over a tank course. Now, I could manage half a mile. But that was an experience for me. The square bashing is a great leveller. Hmm. And you get shouted at and bawled at and all the rest of it. But by the time you come to the end of it, I think our square bashing was 6 to 8 weeks. And then I went on to holding detachment. And then I went to deep cut as a trade training for corporal ammunition.
Looking back at national service, it's something that comes round a lot in politics, as people suggesting that national service should be brought back for the youth of today. It would solve a lot of the problems. Are you an advocate of that?
I'm an advocate of some sort of community service linked to military training. It doesn't have to be 2 years, it could be less than a year. But I think somebody leaving school and coming into the army environment, it wouldn't do them any harm.
Now, moving on from your national service, that wasn't where you left the service at all, really, because you found yourself eventually back as a chaplain with the RAF, serving not just in the UK, but also overseas as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting journey, because when I was at CAD Kyneton, and that's the base where all the bomb disposal people are trained. I was Corporal Clark Ammunition there. And I remember in one of my guard duties, the padre appeared. He was a local minister. And he knocked on the door, and the corporal, the guard, shouted, you know, Private Grubb, there's a guy here, he's got his collar on the wrong way. And I went out and spoke to him. And he really started me on the journey, which led me to theological college. So I look back at my national service at Kyneton as a great experience. For me personally.
Was that what you would call the calling then? Was that the first that you'd you thought about following that? I mean, we'll come on to this in your eventual career, I suppose, in a couple of minutes. But it's not a career, it's a vocation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a calling, really. I felt called into ministry, really, my last year at school. And those of my friends who remember me say it was really the last term at school. Of course, I wasn't academically very bright and very well in my hires. I concentrated in running. And, you know, the Church of Scotland didn't want runners at that particular time. So I ended up in the army without many qualifications at all. I think I had higher history, higher geography, higher English, taken in about three or four different sittings, which, you know, nowadays is in one go.
Yeah.
But that was the background to it. And when I went into the army, it was an opportunity, and I studied, and I eventually went into theological college after my army experience.
Okay, so you end up as a chaplain with the RAF, and you're based, amongst other places, in Cyprus, where you're not just dealing with the RAF, but you're dealing with a lot of the army as well.
Yeah, when I finished theological college and was ordained, I applied to the army, actually, to become a chaplain, because I wanted to give back something to the army of what I had received in national service. And they said, well, sorry, army chaplaincy is full up. You can change the colour of your uniform and go into the Air Force. I said, yes, fine. And I have no regrets about that. I enjoyed it. I had various postings. I started off in Cosford and then went on to 3 years in Cyprus in Nicosia. And everybody said, when I heard I was going posted to Cyprus, oh, it's a marvellous posting. It's a, you know, bask in the sun and all the rest of it. Of course, I arrived there in October. I had 1 month or 2 months unaccompanied, and Elizabeth arrived in December, and on the Christmas Eve, intercommunal fighting started, and our house was right on the green, what became the Green Line, so I had bullets through our house, and that was my introduction to Cyprus as a family.
And when you look back at that time, was that a feeling that you felt?
Of fear?
Yes.
No, I suppose you're young. You cope with that. It was harder on the families because they didn't know what was happening. Mm. I was wandering around Nicosia and other bits of the island as chaplain to three bases, two very small ones, and of course Nicosia itself.
Okay, we're going to take a break for music, and we've gone seasonal with it. I know you've got a few favourite Christmas songs. The first one we'll play in is Eartha Kitt with her version, many versions over the years of Santa Baby. Why this one in particular?
Oh, because I love Eartha Kitt. Eartha Kitt was absolutely super. She was an iconic figure. And everybody really enjoyed her singing, so that's it. Ba-boom, 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 ba-boom,
ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa, honey, money. One little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
That's Santa Baby by Eartha Kitt. It's Garrison FM. I'm Mark McKenzie. With me is George Grump, the Lord Provost of Edinburgh. And George, we were talking about your time in Cyprus with serving as a chaplain with the RAF. On leaving there, you decided to take up the position of minister and ended up in Edinburgh. Very much an Edinburgh man, aren't you? Good to be back in the city.
It was great to be back in the city, but of course between Cyprus and Craig's Bank, there was another journey. I came back home to Hemsall and Swinderbury, which were training stations for the RAF, and then on to Scampton, which was the home of Dambusters. And then from there, I had a great time at Scampton because I opened a new Hutted church, which was good, and I had a good congregation. And from there, I went to Lahrbrook in Germany, and that was a good 2 years. One of the best 2 years we had. We had a lovely quarter, and they were able to travel with a small caravan down to Italy, Switzerland, France. Yeah.
And then out of the services, and as we say, to Edinburgh and Craig Bank, and a chance to settle down. Was that how it was viewed?
Well, it was a chance to settle down, but not so much to settle down. I suppose I basically wanted to come back to Edinburgh. I'd been ordained as a Methodist minister, and there was a Church of Scotland, Free Churches chaplain. I wanted to come back to my roots in Edinburgh and to the Church of Scotland. And I came back to 1 year, really testing me to see how I was as a minister. And I had to do a course at New College. And during that 1 year, I had to do pastoral studies. And I studied criminology, and I won the gold medal in criminology. from the University of Edinburgh, which was delightful, good experience. And of course the press had a ball. You know, here was a young minister, an expert in criminology, which is...
Has that stood you in good stead, or has it just been a bit of something that you've taken with you? Did you get any use out of that whatsoever?
No, I joined the Howard League of Penal Reform to try and reform the prison movement. I continued getting the Howard League magazine and trying to keep up to date as far as possible.
You mentioned winning. There is definitely a competitive streak in there, I can tell. You mentioned earlier on as well that you were a runner, and I believe you still hold the record at the Royal High for the half mile.
Yeah, I mean, the record stood since 1954, and it has not been equaled. But of course, and only I like to whisper this, is of course they went metric.
I was going to be too polite to mention that, but it was going through my mind. Time as a parish minister. At what point did you decide politics was going to be the way forward?
Oh, not until very late. I mean, I can remember sitting after watching a rugby match. I used to go with my friend, the minister over in Kirk of Field in Edinburgh, and we used to go to the rugby matches together. And this one was, I think it was an English victory over Scotland. And I was sitting at night, sipping a malt whiskey, wondering what I was going to preach about. After the low lights of the game, I was watching on television Paddy Ashdown came on. And of course, Paddy Ashdown, with his service background, I sort of resonated with him. And he said, there must be a better way in politics. There must be a third way. Why don't you join the Liberal Democrats? So I went that night and phoned and signed up. And two or three days later, there was a knock on my door. And it was the young Paul Eadie, who now runs our the social work department convener, asking me if I would deliver leaflets. And it was a bit of a shock. But I said, yeah, and started then to get involved with Liberal Democrats.
Had you thought about politics much before that point?
I'd always been interested in politics. I mean, even as a youngster when I was in the local church, I can remember sitting up and, of course, there was no television in those days, but they'd give you the results of the general elections. Mm. And I remember writing them down, sheets of paper, and the numbers that people got. So there must have been a sort of latent interest in what was going on politically.
Has politics fulfilled you, would you say?
I don't know if it's fulfilled me. I think, I'm still a minister of the church. Mm. I still take services occasionally. And that is my main thrust. But politics I've enjoyed. It was great. Being elected. But of course the background to my election is that they put me into Queensferry really as a sort of also-ran. They said to me at that particular time, we're putting you in so you can fight an election for experience. And I thought, yeah, fighting an election is a great experience, but I won it, and that was a complete surprise.
And so that's when the hard work started, wasn't it?
That's when the hard work started, and suddenly I was aware I was very much a member of a political party. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, we'll take another break for another song, and again it's a song that's been recorded over the years by many people, Mary's Boy Child by Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, that was a great Christmas carol. It really strikes a chord with many folk, and that's why I want it.
Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new King born today, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. While shepherds watch their flock by night, them see a bright new shining star, them hear a choir sing, the music seemed to come from afar. Now Joseph and his wife Mary come to Bethlehem that night. Them find no place to born she child, not a single room was in sight. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new King born today, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. By and by them find a little nook in a stable all forlorn, and in a manger cold and dark, Mary's little boy was born. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new King born today, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
That's Harry Belafonte and Mary's Boy Child. It's Get a Sniff Out. I'm Mark McKenzie. My special guest today, just ahead of Christmas, is the Right Honourable George Grubb, who's the Lord Provost for Edinburgh. George, we've talked a lot about your service and your background. You find yourself now, that jump from being elected as a councillor, which you didn't really expect. You were in there to fight the election. You've now found yourself as councillor. And then the next thing you know, you're Lord Provost. I'm sure there's a bit of a gap between the two, but can you quite believe what's happened?
Can't really, but from 1999 to being elected, and then of course very quickly I became the chair of the Liberal Democratic Group, and Jenny Daw was the leader, and I suppose together we went through the period of opposition, and then in 2007 when I stood again for election, although I'd won in 2003, an overwhelming majority at Queensferry, and 2007 I came back to the council and we were the largest party and my name was put forward as Lord Provost, and that was really a very humbling experience to find that you're Lord Provost and Lord Lieutenant.
Well, what kind of emotions go through pride, obviously, I would imagine go through. Is there an element of fear?
Is it not really fear in the sense that you're frightened of what's going to happen to you? It's more wondering if you can fulfil the office.
Because there's a lot of expectations and there's a lot of representation to be made.
There is. The representation I enjoy. The chairing of the council was the hard bit. Because when you're elected as Lord Provost and you're sitting there and they put the motion forward and all the rest of it, and then the chief executive asks you to come and you sign, and then you move into the chair and you're chairing the council all in one swoop. There's no preparation for it.
And it's been a tough time for Edinburgh, hasn't it? I mean, I hoped we were going to get through all of this, but it would be it's almost unavoidable to think back over your period and not think of the word trams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the trams, it's been a very difficult one, the trams. But we were caught in the recession as well, and that makes it difficult. I think we've done well. I don't want to get political, but I think we've done reasonably well. Yeah.
And have you found that at any point a difficult balance between your politics and obviously your faith as well?
No, really. I mean, people say to me, how do you square it being a minister and also a politician? But church politics can be pretty hard too sometimes.
Do you think politicians get a bit of a rough deal, or a bit of are they all tarred with the same brush these days, do you think?
I think we're all tarred with the same brush in many ways, but in actual fact, your personal integrity and honesty has got to come through.
Looking back over the last year, it's been a big one for Edinburgh with the military connections and Armed Forces Day, which was a fantastic day in the summer, put Edinburgh right in the spotlight. Edinburgh's always obviously been on the map as far as the military in the UK is concerned, but right in the heart of things. Your memories of that day?
It was a wonderful day. It's a day which will stick with me for the rest of my life. To have seen that display of the military down at the beside the palace was great. Yeah,
And a very high profile as well. When I mentioned about fear earlier on, we were talking about that. Was that one of the emotions that possibly went around? Do you take it in your stride now when you meet the Queen on events such as that? I mean, you're the Lord Lieutenant, so that's part of your role as well. Do you take it for granted now?
Oh, you never take it for granted. You make sure you read the briefing notes. You make sure you're up to date with what's going on. I mean, it's interesting because I was joking last week with somebody. I said, if I ever write a book, I'm going to put a chapter in about the people that I've met, and it's going to be called The Queen, the Pope and the Pandas. Because those are the three. I meet the Queen a lot. the Pope. It was a wonderful visit for the community of faith. And of course, the pandas arrived last week and I met them.
And I know that just a couple of weeks ago you had the pleasure of taking the salute as the Royal Scots Dragoon Guards marched down the Royal Mile. These must be fantastic occasions for you as well.
They're terrific, and that's once again I pinch myself. I think, oh golly, here's this former corporal in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps taking the salute. But then, of course, I went on to become the Padre in the RAF and then Lord Lieutenant. So it's... Yeah, it's a great experience.
In closing, a message for the soldiers listening to this and their families as well as we approach Christmas.
It's not easy to give a Christmas message to armed forces, particularly those who are going to be serving abroad. But Christmas is a time of friendship and peace. It's a time of thinking about families. It's a time of thinking about home. And it's a time, too, of thinking about those who have gone before us, our friends who have perhaps not survived, or of relatives who have not survived, and a time to take stock in our own hearts and our minds what the Christmas message is. And I think it's one of peace and concord and faith and hope.
Your final piece of music, it doesn't get much more Christmassy than Bing Crosby.
Oh yeah, I think Bing really sums it all up, and I'm sure on Christmas Day people will turn to Bing and it will be a white Christmas, although I hope it's not as white as it was last year.
George Crubb, thank you very much.
I dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry. Christmas.